Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are correcting, I think, a major gap in history. You know, a gap that often leaves a whole civilization just labeled as enigmatic or lost.
Mm-hmm.
We're jumping back to ancient Italy, way before the rise of the Roman Empire, to explore the Etruscans, and we're being guided by Christopher Smith's essential work, The Etruscans.
And that word you use, enigmatic, that is precisely what Smith is pushing back against.
Right.
For centuries, our whole understanding of the Etruscans has been filtered, you know, through the lens of Roman propaganda, and it makes them seem like these mysterious foreign people who just vanished.
Yeah.
So this deep dive, it's really a mission to show they didn't vanish. They were absorbed. And more importantly, they fundamentally shaped what Rome became.
It's a huge shift in how we view ancient history. We're sort of taught this straight line, right? Greece, then Rome.
Mm-hmm.
But this work forces you to see there's this massive, sophisticated Etruscan bridge sitting right in the middle. If you really want to understand the foundations of Western civilization, I mean, from political symbols to engineering, you have to start with them.
Exactly. Our goal here is to use Smith's method to separate historical fact, which is coming more and more from archaeology, from historical fiction.
The fiction written by the winners.
Fiction written by the winners to downplay their own cultural debt. We're getting past the myth of the mystery people.
Okay, so let's unpack the author's credentials, because his perspective is really the key here. Christopher Smith isn't just a historian reading old texts.
No, not at all. He's a massive authority. He's a distinguished professor of ancient history at St. Andrews, for sure. But what really gives his argument its weight is his practical, hands-on expertise.
Okay.
He was the director of the British School at Rome. That put him right at the center of ongoing archaeological fieldwork.
So he was on the ground.
Right there on the ground, seeing the latest Italian scholarship on these sites as it was happening.
So he's not just relying on, you know, dusty scrolls. He's looking at the actual stuff the Etruscans left behind.
That's it, exactly. His real strength is his interdisciplinary approach. He brilliantly combines the traditional textual analysis. So reading Roman authors like Livy or Tacitus.
Who are often biased.
Deeply biased, and writing centuries after the fact. He combines that with cutting-edge material evidence. He prioritizes the material culture, the tombs, the city plans, the art. The physical stuff gives you a much more objective counter-narrative to all that Roman spin.
That distinction is so important. If you only read a Roman history book, you get one story.
Mm-hmm.
A story that justifies their conquest. But if you look at the architecture, the art,
mm-hmm.
you get a completely different picture of this thriving, powerful society.
And it lets him ask the right questions, like why were they called mysterious in the first place? And the answer he finds isn't that they were unknowable, it's that the Romans spent centuries making them seem that way.
Okay, let's strip away that mystery then.
Okay.
What's the central idea, the main thesis Smith wants us to take away from this?
The core argument is really crystal clear. The Etruscans were not exotic outsiders who showed up and then disappeared.
Right.
They were a sophisticated, and this is the key part, an indigenous Italian civilization. Their culture grew right out of the local Iron Age peoples, the Villanovan culture, around the 9th and 8th centuries BCE.
I remember that old debate from school. Did they come from Lydia, like Herodotus said, or were they always Italian?
And Smith navigates that so well. He says the real question isn't about some simple migration. It's about what we call ethnogenesis.
Ethnogenesis.
Yeah, it's the complex process of how a people, a unique culture, is born from what's already there. The local Villanovan groups, they adopted influences from abroad, you know, fancy art and ideas from the Eastern Mediterranean, but they transformed them into something totally unique, totally Italian. They became Etruscan right there in Italy.
So the book traces this whole journey from those early Iron Age folks through to the rise of these powerful, incredibly wealthy city-states, places like Tarpinia, Carrere, Volci.
And that's where you see the foundational influence so clearly. Smith shows that their political structures, their religious worldview, the Disciplina Etrusca, and their advanced city planning were all inherited by early Rome.
So the Etruscan achievement wasn't wiped out?
Not at all. It was just Romanized. It was transformed into the unacknowledged cultural backbone of the Roman Republic.
Let's dig into that historical distortion a bit more. I mean, how exactly did Roman writers manage to bury this legacy?
I mean, it's the classic case, right? The victors write the history to fit their needs. Roman writers. Well, they sometimes admired the Etruscans' piety, but they also painted them as foreign or decadent or even bad at fighting.
And that did two things for them.
It did. It justified conquering Etruscan lands, and it helped cement this idea that Rome's institutions were purely Roman invention.
So they basically poached all the best ideas, the engineering, the symbols, and then edited the history books to make it look like they came up with them.
That's a great way to put it. It was strategic intellectual appropriation. And that's why Smith insists we have to privilege the archaeology. Because when you look at the actual physical evidence, the political agenda in the Roman text just falls apart.
The mystery is just a political story.
It's a construct designed by outsiders to diminish the contributions of the people they conquered.
Okay, going back to those indigenous origins. What does the archaeology actually tell us about that shift from the earlier Villanovan people to what we recognize as Etruscan?
The evidence for that local continuity is just overwhelming. Villanovan culture, which comes right before, had very specific traits, especially their burial practices, cremation, these distinctive urns.
Okay.
Then as you move into the next period, you see those same communities just get rapidly wealthier and more sophisticated. They're absorbing Greek and Phoenician trade goods, but they aren't abandoning who they are.
And their society. We know it wasn't one big unified empire. It was a collection of these city-states. Was that model a source of their initial success?
Oh, absolutely. They're competitive, rich city-states, Veii, Tarquinia, Cerveteri. They were economic powerhouses, masters of Mediterranean trade. This local autonomy meant they could generate wealth very quickly, develop specialized crafts. They had a loose confederation, sometimes called the League of 12 Cities, but it was mostly for religious festivals.
But that same dynamic network that fueled their early power, that became their critical weakness against Rome, didn't it?
It was their fatal flaw. They were so committed to their local independence that they almost never acted as one single military or political force.
Right.
And this fragmentation was just exploited mercilessly by Rome, which had this centralized, ruthless, consistent military command. So when one Etruscan city was threatened, the others would often hesitate. They'd put their own interests first.
That is a powerful political lesson right there. Let's shift to their religious life and their social structure, because this is where they were truly unique. Tell us about the Disciplina Etrusca.
The Disciplina Etrusca was so much more than just rituals. It was a whole complex system of divination, a science for interpreting the will of the gods and structuring your whole society around it.
Wow.
It was so respected that the Romans actually kept a college of Etruscan priests, the haruspices, for centuries after the conquest.
And what did these haruspices actually do? I've heard about examining animal entrails.
That's haruspicy, yes. They specialized in reading signs from nature. So interpreting lightning was a big one, but their most famous practice was the detailed examination of the entrails of a sacrificed animal, especially the liver.
The liver. Why the liver?
They believed the liver was a microcosm of the universe. Mm. Every little lobe, every marking, it all corresponded to a god or some kind of sign. The famous bronze liver of Piacenza is basically a 3D textbook for this spiritual science.
Now, for the thing that I think really upends our assumptions about the ancient world, the incredibly high status of Etruscan women?
This is, I would argue, the most surprising thing you discover when you compare them to their neighbors. Etruscan noble women were literate, they owned property, they kept their own family names after marriage, and, crucially, they participated in public social life. They were central figures.
I love the imagery we get from the art, like on the sarcophagus of the spouses. You see a husband and a wife reclining together at a banquet. Why was that so shocking to, say, a visiting Greek person?
It was scandalous, absolutely scandalous. In Greece and in early Rome, a respectable woman, a matrona, was confined to the home.
Right.
She would never, ever socialize in public with men who weren't her family, and she would certainly never attend a banquet alongside her husband where there was wine. The Greeks saw this Etruscan freedom, this public equality, as a sign of immorality. It just completely challenges the idea that those restrictive patriarchal roles were the universal norm back then.
So we had this innovative, politically fragmented, but socially advanced civilization.
Mm-hmm.
How did this long, complicated relationship with Rome finally turned into conquest?
Well, you have to remember that Rome's own very early history was dominated by Etruscan influence. The traditional stories are of Etruscan kings like Tarquinius Priscus ruling Rome.
Mm-hmm.
But the turning point, the moment that really signaled the end of Etruscan political independence, was the fall of the city of Veii to Rome in 396 BCE.
That must have been a huge psychological blow.
It was catastrophic. Veii was rich, powerful, and very close to Rome. And its fall partly because the other Etruscan cities couldn't get a unified relief effort together, showed Rome exactly how to win.
Pick them off one by one.
Pick them off one by one. The story of the Etruscans after that is a slow, irreversible process of absorption, of Romanization.
But absorption, as Smith argues, isn't annihilation. So what are the specific iconic things Rome inherited that prove this continuity?
Oh, the list is incredible because it's stuff we still think of as quintessentially Roman. Take the fasces. That bundle of rods around an axe, the symbol of a magistrate's power, you still see it on government buildings today. That is an Etruscan symbol. The purple-bordered toga, the mark of high Roman status, was adopted from Etruria.
And what about their skills, their engineering?
Crucial. The engineering knowledge for hydraulics, the drainage systems you need to build a city like Rome on a marsh, and the basic architectural designs for their big stone temples, that all came from Etruria. And of course, the entire framework for divination, the Disciplina Etrusca, remained a core part of Roman state religion.
The legacy really does live on. It's just wearing Roman clothes.
Oh.
Okay, let's try to pull these ideas together into the book's core themes.
The first one has to be deconstructing the mystery. The biggest takeaway is that the whole mystery is a historical illusion created by biased sources. And that means for us today, we should always be looking for that counter-narrative for the perspective of the conquered.
And that flows right into theme two, the primacy of archaeology. Because the written sources are so compromised, the physical stuff, the tombs, the art, the city ruins, that becomes the only objective voice the Etruscans have left. It's the key.
Theme three is that hard lesson of political fragmentation versus unity. The Etruscan failure to unify their powerful city-states against Rome's centralized power was their ultimate downfall. It's a reflection on modern governance, really. Long-term survival often requires deep cooperation.
And finally, my favorite, the theme of cultural continuity versus disappearance. The Etruscan legacy didn't just vanish. It was the foundation, the unacknowledged layer that Roman identity was built on top of. Culture doesn't break. It just adapts and transforms.
Yeah, and Smith's book is just filled with these really powerful, clear statements. We should share a few of the core ideas that really capture this new way of thinking.
Okay, how about this one? The Etruscans were not mysterious outsiders who vanished without trace, but indigenous Italians whose innovations became the foundation of Roman greatness. I mean, that's the whole book in one sentence. It puts continuity front and center.
And this one builds on it. To understand Rome, we must first understand the Etruscans. For Roman civilization was built upon Etruscan foundations. That forces you to completely rewrite the timeline of classical history in your head.
I also love this social point. Etruscan women enjoyed freedoms that would have scandalized Greeks and early Romans. It just challenges that lazy assumption that ancient patriarchy was this one single monolithic thing. It shows there were other ways to organize a society.
And finally, about his method. The painted tombs of Tarquinia are not just art. They are political and social documents, broadcasting the worldview and reinforcing the status of an elite class. It's a great reminder that a piece of art can be a primary source for understanding power.
So how do we take Smith's method, this insistence on questioning the dominant story, and apply it to our own lives?
The most direct application is just critical source analysis. When you hear a story in the news or in politics that paints one group as chaotic or foreign or flawed, you should pause.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, who is telling the story and what is their political interest in framing it that way? Smith's work is basically a masterclass in how to read propaganda.
It makes you so aware of how dominant groups shape stories to justify themselves. And then there's the political application, the diplomatic insight from the Etruscan failure.
Absolutely. Their failure because of disunity is a perfect case study for modern federal systems or international alliances. If local identity always trumps broader strategic unity, you often compromise your own long-term security. The Etruscan League is kind of a historical mirror for some of our contemporary struggles.
My biggest takeaway, the thing I just loved, was realizing the symbols I see every single day, like the fasces on courthouses, are actually Etruscan. It's like finding out the cornerstone of your own house was built by some secret, uncredited architect.
That feeling of discovery is what makes Smith's work so great. The final provocative thought I want to leave you with is this. Every time history tells you a culture vanished or was a mystery, it usually just means we haven't looked hard enough. Or, more likely, that the victor did a very good job of erasing the debt they owed.
So consider this. How much of what we all accept as inherently Roman, the majesty, the structure, the law, is actually just a ghost of Etruscan civilization, wearing a better-fitting purple toga? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.